Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Coleman.
Hey, 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 welcome to the Rockcast. I am your host, Monty Colvin. So glad you could join me. And I've got a lot to cover today, so let me get right to it.
Do we have to do this?
And let's get things started with an email from the one and only Jimmy G in Chicago. And Jimmy is a longtime listener, and he always provides me with great questions and top tens and just tons of podcast material. So I can't wait to see what Jimmy has to say. So this should be good, and Jimmy starts out with, "Hey Monty, how's it going?" Okay, well, I was expecting something a little different, but thanks for asking, Jimmy. And you know, I'd say I'm hanging in there. Alex and I are making a go of it here in Houston, Texas, and it's not always easy, but so far we're paying those bills. And for me, a lot of it is thanks to you guys, because every time one of you goes to my website and orders something or commissions me to do a painting, it all goes to help Alex and I stay alive, and we appreciate it so much. And so thank you to people like Chris Bruns, who bought one of my Dimebag Darrell paintings. Cole Woodard commissioned me to do a big painting of Alice in Chains. And at first I thought, oh, he's probably going to want Lane Staley in the original lineup. But no, he wanted one with the most recent lineup, and I said, all right, I'll do it. Because that's just the kind of guy I am. I'll do you a painting of Eddie Van Halen if you want, but if you'd rather have the drummer for Bang Tango, I can do that too. And speaking of drummers, William Butts commissioned me to do a painting of Robert Sweet from Striper, and he loved it, and so thank you, William. Also, shout out to Chris Stafford, who bought a whole bunch of prints for his rock and roll studio. And thank you, Phil Robinson and Matt Caslow, who both ordered refrigerator magnets recently. And anyone else I happen to forget, forgive me, and thank you so much for supporting me and this show. Now, one of the advantages to living in Houston these days is that Alex and I don't miss out on things that we used to. For instance, recently, Galactic Cowboy guitarist Dane Sonye got married, and we got to celebrate it with him. And his new bride, Leslie, that's right, he's now married to Mrs. Leslie.
Mrs. Leslie!
Yeah, she's also a musician, and the next day after their wedding, her and Dane hosted a jam session in downtown Houston. And it wasn't really publicized a lot, but Ben, Dane, and I got up and did three Galactic Cowboys songs acoustically. And it was the first time we'd played together on a stage since, I think, 2019. And it was fun. Even though I don't really like acoustic shows, I like playing our music the way God intended, which is full up. But it was a good time, and I can't wait now to get on a stage with my rig and crank it up. But it was a good day, and we enjoyed being a part of it. And congratulations to Dane and Leslie. I wish you guys joy and happiness. Hopefully Alex and I will be next, but we gotta save up our money first. But don't worry, Alex, it's gonna happen.
I wanna know what we're going to do about this.
Jimmy G also had this to say in his email. Monty, time to celebrate your efforts on the Rockcast. Did you know that only 3% of all podcasts last longer than a year? You've been kicking podcast ass for years now and still going strong. Cheers on approaching 300 episodes, and here's to 300 more. I think if you Google the stats, it'll show that you're one of a kind and in an elite group of music podcasters that have as many episodes as you. Wow. Well, first of all, thanks so much, Jimmy. That's very kind of you to say. And hopefully I will make it to 300 episodes. What have I got? Like another 8 after this one? And so, yeah, I think that's possible. But I've never Googled the statistics or anything, and I don't know what other shows do, really. I know when I first started doing this back in 2008, the one I was listening to was Michael Butler and the Rock and Roll Geek Show. And back then, he was going, Rock and Roll Geek Show, episode 5061. And I knew I was never going to catch up with him, so I've just never really worried about how many shows I did. For a while, I was trying to do 2 a month, and that just got to be too much. And I'd have people say, yeah, I've fallen so far behind. And so I finally just said, you know, I'm just going to do 1 a month. Which I know is not what you're supposed to do. And I've been told, you know, if you want a successful podcast, you've just got to bombard people like almost daily. But that's the thing. I just don't care. You know, honestly, I kind of do this for Galactic Cowboy fans. And hopefully along the way, I've also picked up other people that like what I'm saying. But I've just really never worried about the numbers. Plus, I don't really trust the internet. I've never Googled myself other than one time. A couple of years ago, I wanted to see what it said my net worth was. And I looked it up and it said, Monty Colvin, musician, songwriter, is worth $1 million.
No.
Yeah, I don't know where they got that. Obviously not by looking at my bank account. But I did think that was funny. And I also pray to God that one of my ex-girlfriends from college or high school sees that and thinks that I'm a millionaire. I would love that. But back to your point, Jimmy. Yeah, I've been doing this a long time. And I'm not even real sure why I have done it for so long. Other than that's just the way I am. Whether it's music or art or this, I just keep working at it. And I'm not sure if you'd call that stupidity or resilience.
It's just stupid.
So like I said, I mostly do this podcast for people who like my music and know about it. But I've come to realize that a lot of them still aren't even listening. And how do I know this? Well, because I'll get messages from people saying, hey, when's the new Galactic Cowboys coming out? Or, hey, did you know there's another band called Galactic Cowboy Orchestra? And to that one, I'll say, yeah, we know. I talked about that on my podcast. Maybe you should try listening. But after 17 or 18 years, I guess people still don't know about it. So if you're one of those people who does listen, then spread the word and tell your friends and maybe they can start enjoying things like this next segment, which if you've been listening for the last several episodes, you'll know that I've been taking a list from different publications and I give you my thoughts. And today I've got 2 different lists. The first one being from the New York Times. And they put together a panel of douchebags who seem to feel like they know the craft of songwriting. And they put together a list of the 30 greatest living American songwriters. So if you're dead, forget about it. If you're from England or Canada, forget about it. And so that eliminates a lot of legendary people. And I'm not going to go through the whole list, but I will tell you there's a lot of surprises. And I'll just start out with, to me, the weirdest choices, one being Bad Bunny. I couldn't name you one of his songs, and I can't understand any of his lyrics. But from all indications, he hates America, so I guess that qualifies him as being a great American songwriter.
Well, yeah.
Other people I did not understand how they got on this list were Jay-Z, Missy Elliott, Young Thug, Babyface, and Outkast. And I'll admit, I'm not really into that kind of music, and so who knows. But there were a few people I did agree with, like Paul Simon, Stevie Wonder, Dolly Parton was on here. That's cool. And I'll even agree with Diane Warren. I actually have a lot of respect for people who just know how to write hit songs. Even if some of those songs you never want to hear again, you know, they were hits. And there's a gift and a talent to that. But of course, more importantly to me than who was on the list are the people who weren't. And the snobby elitists somehow left off Billy Joel. And yes, he wrote some stuff like Uptown Girl that I did not like. But he also had a mountain of hits that were just great. And of course, it goes without saying, there was no metal or hard rock on this list. If Taylor Swift can be on this list, I think James Hetfield also deserves to be on here. And how about No Dave Grohl? That guy's a songwriting machine. What about Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains? He's American, and he's also alive. And another one I thought of was Todd Rundgren. He's American, and as far as I know, he has not passed away.
I thought he died. I didn't even know he was still alive.
So once again, the New York Times firmly has their heads stuck up their rear ends. But not to be outdone, Rolling Stone magazine said, "Hold my drink. We haven't pissed off anybody in about 5 minutes, so here's our list of the greatest bass players of all time."
Oh, goody!
Now, let me preface this by saying there's going to be guys on this list I've never heard of, and that doesn't mean that they're not great. I'm not into jazz. I'm not into a lot of funk. I don't even really like blues or R&B. So I'm going to cut a lot of slack to most of these people and just say, all right, whatever. On the other hand, there's going to be some guys that if they're not on here, I'm going to be angry. But let's get it going at number 50 with somebody named Thundercat. Apparently, he plays a lot of hip-hop and jazz, so there you go, right off the bat. At 49, it's Duff McKagan, and at 48, here we go, this is one of my first big problems. It's Kim Deal, and she was in the Pixies, but most importantly, she's female. And trust me, I guarantee that there's going to be some virtuoso players left off this list so they could meet a quota.
Uh-huh.
At 47, it's Leland Sklar, and at 46, it's Peter Hook. And I've never heard of him, but apparently he played in Joy Division. At 47, it's Esperanza Spalding. She's a woman of color, and she plays jazz, and I'll just have to say, okay, I'll take your word for it, Rolling Stone, as I will for 44, Joseph Macwella. Never heard of him. Let's see. Number 43, Mike Watt. He played in the Minutemen. And at number 42 is Tony Levin. And of course he should be on here. King Crimson, Peter Gabriel. He's a legend. Moving on. Number 41 is George Porter Jr. Never heard of him. Number 40 is Bill Black. I guess he played with Elvis. And at 39, Rolling Stone needed to get another chick in there, so they went with Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth. And keep in mind, she's ahead of Tony Levin.
That is just the height of bullshit.
38 is Pino Palladino, and he played for a bunch of people, so I'm assuming he's good. Now, 37 is kind of interesting to me because it's John McVie of Fleetwood Mac. And it's interesting because they're on the radio every day. I like Fleetwood Mac. They've got a lot of great songs. In fact, Lindsey Buckingham could have been on the songwriters list. But I was in the car one day and I was listening to, I think it was Go Your Own Way. And I was listening to the bass part and my thought was, you know, McVie, you know, he's nothing great. But he plays kind of simple and it's what needs to be played. He's just one of those kind of bass players. But does he need to be on this list of the greatest of all time? I don't know. But I will give it up for number 36 because it's Les Claypool. And I've never really liked Primus, but I'll admit that guy's a freak. Now at 35, it's Louis Johnson, and I've got a little bit of a story for you about him. Back around 86, I got my first gig playing bass, and I was in this band that required that I play one song that had some slapping in it. And I had never done that before, so I went and bought this instructional video set, and it was by Lewis Johnson. And he sat there and he kind of showed you how to slap. And I never got any good at it, but I did learn enough to get through that one song. And then I never played any kind of slap bass ever again.
The whole story just never made any sense.
At number 34, it's Richard Davis. He's a black guy playing an upright bass, and I have never heard of him. But at 33, it's Lemmy. And I personally really like this choice because even though Lemmy wasn't like a technically great bass player, I loved his tone and he sure as heck influenced me.
It's all about you.
Number 32 is Sting. Number 31 is a black guy named Bernard Edwards. I don't know who he is. Number 30 is somebody named Bob Moore. Apparently he played country music. And at 29 is Tina Weymouth.
Who?
Yeah, it's that chick from the Talking Heads. And if you're wondering why she's on this list of greatest bass players, just remember it's Rolling Stone.
Oh!
28 is Aston Barnett.
Huh?
27, David Hood.
Huh?
And 26, Israel Lopez.
What?
Now, at 25, they finally get to somebody that I totally agree with. It's Cliff Burton. And I don't need to explain that. He would have been in my top 10, probably. But at 24, they surprisingly have Geddy Lee.
Geddy Lee!
Not surprising that he's on this list, but surprised he's so low.
Geddy Lee, best bass player ever, come on!
But one step ahead of Geddy Lee is, at 23, Bill Wyman. And that's just a freaking joke. You know, I get it. He was in the Rolling Stones, and your magazine is named Rolling Stone. And so just like your guitar list has to have Keith Richards at number one, you gotta have Bill Wyman on here. And all right, put him on here, but not ahead of Geddy Lee. That's ridiculous. And if Rolling Stone magazine ever comes out with a greatest drummers list, which maybe they already did, but I'm sure they'll have Charlie Watts at number one, and they won't even put Mike Portnoy on the list.
I'm outraged.
But whatever. Number 22 is Flea, and yeah, I love Flea. He's great. 21 is Geezer Butler of Black Sabbath, of course. When you help invent a genre, you should probably be on this list. At 20, it's Rick Danko of the band. Better than Geddy Lee? I don't think so. At 19, Verdine White, I guess. At 18, it's Chris Squire. And yes, he was an incredible player, but he also had a bass tone that influenced a lot of people. And years ago, I was out in LA with the band, and I see him standing outside the door of a hotel. And I walked over and went up to him, and I said, "Mr. Squire, you have the tone." And he kind of looked at me, and he said, well, he didn't say anything. He actually just grunted. Ugh. And so I just walked away. I don't know, maybe he was drunk or something. Who knows?
Great story.
Anyway, at 17, it's somebody named Robbie Shakespeare, looks like a soul brother. At 16, Charlie Hayden, never heard of him. 15 is Donald Duck Dunn, played with the Blues Brothers. 14, John Paul Jones of Zeppelin. 13, Stanley Clark. 12 is Willie Dixon. 11 is Phil Lesh of the Grateful Dead. Well, at least I've heard of him. But here's where it's really going to get good, the top 10, and it starts at 10 with Ron Carter.
I don't know who that is.
Number 9 is the amazing Paul McCartney. Number 8 is Jocko. Number 7 is Larry Graham. Number 6, Jack Bruce. Number 5 is studio musician Carole Kaye. Number 4, Bootsy Collins. Number 3 is one of my favorites of all time. It's John Entwistle of The Who. And once again, yeah, he was a great player, but his tone was just killer. Number two is Charles Mingus. Okay, I'll take your word for it. And at number one, it's James Jamerson. And I have heard a lot of people talk about him, but like I said, I'm not into jazz or Motown or funk or whatever. I'm into hard rock and metal, and outside of Lemmy and Cliff Burton and a couple of others, that whole genre was just ignored. And so here we go with the glaring omissions.
I can't wait.
And I'll start with John Myung from Dream Theater. Ever heard of him, Rolling Stone? I guess not. Because if you did know who he was, maybe you could have taken, say, Kim Deal off the list and put him in there. But oh no, you writers are just too cool to do that. What about Frankie Bello of Anthrax? Not quite as good as Rick Danko, is he? Or how about that guy from Mudvayne? I don't even know his name, but the guy's a freaking wizard. Not to mention no Dave Ellefson or Rudy Sarzo. And I could go on and on. But the three that they left off that bothered me the most were Didi Ramone, who is a legend. And if you're going to have the girl from the Talking Heads on this list, he better go on the list too, way ahead of her. And next, it was a complete abomination not to have this next one in the top 10. But you freaking left Steve Harris off the list completely.
Ah!
And finally, the guy I would have had maybe at number one or two, Billy Sheehan. To totally leave him off this list is just a crime. Like seriously, you should not only be fired from your job, but you should probably serve some jail time.
I am very, very, very disgusted.
All right, I got an email from Anthony Castellito, and he wanted to know if I've ever done a album rundown for our last Galactic Cowboy release, Long Way Back to the Moon. And honestly, I don't remember because that was in 2017. And I can't believe it's been that long since we put out anything new. But you know, even if I did do a recap of that album back then, let's do it again. Allow me now to recap the recap. And I'll try to give you some inside insights about that album, that time, those songs. And hopefully you'll find it interesting. So I'll start back at the beginning when we started talking about doing this album, and I think it was around 2016. I was living in Kansas City at the time, and one afternoon I got a call from Jim Podolsky. And Jim was a guy that used to work with Dream Theater, and now he was working for Mascot Records that was based in Holland. And he explained to me that they were a label who worked with a lot of progressive bands, and he wanted to know if Galactic Cowboys would be interested in signing with Mascot and doing an album. So I talked it over with the guys, and Dane was ready to come back and be in the band again. And we eventually agreed to do it, and we signed with Mascot. But as is the case with most albums, it takes time. And I spent months on the phone talking to Jim and making plans. And he had all kinds of great ideas, but he also, every conversation, would ask me about touring. And I told him right up front, I don't know about touring. We've all got jobs and families and mortgages. And this is not like the 90s when we could just leave and come back. I mean, it's kind of like now, we'd love to play some shows, but it's not like we can leave and be out for 6 weeks or several months. But I did assure him that we would make a great album. So we started working on the songs. Ben flew to Kansas City a couple of times and we wrote together. And then I would fly to Houston where we would start trying to put everything together as a band. And one thing we did was we went back and listened to some old demos for songs that we'd never released. And one of the songs was called In the Clouds. And it was literally the first song that Al and I wrote together. We're talking 1989. Him and I had just quit The Awful Truth, and we got together, decided we were going to start a band, and we wrote this song called In the Clouds. And when we got Ben and Dane in the band, we did a demo for it, but it never went on an album. And when we listened to it, we said, wow, why did we never release this? This is great. So we decided to completely re-record it, and it turned out it was the first song on Long Way Back to the Moon. Now, speaking of the recording process, we recorded this album at our drummer's house. Alan Doss was the engineer, and he also played drums. And he had one bedroom, basically, that was the control room. And in another bigger room, he had his drum set up and all of our amps and everything else. And that's how we recorded the entire album. No big studios, no big budgets. Alan had Pro Tools on his computer, and that's how we did it. Now, song number two is Internal Masquerade. And I originally did a home demo for this back in 2010. And Galactic wasn't doing anything at the time, so I sent the demo to Ben, and I asked him if he'd want to replace my lead vocals with his, and this is what that sounded like. So 7 years later, we got together as a band with Dane on guitar and Alan on drums in his studio, and this is what it ends up sounding like. So that was the first single off this album, and we did a video for it, and every now and then it'll still pop up on YouTube. But Mascot did almost nothing to promote it, so, you know, never got on radio, blah, blah, blah. You've heard all this before.
Oh, how exciting.
Now, the next song is Blood in My Eyes, and this was much like the previous song where I wrote this in 2010 and had Ben sing on the demo, and he wrote the words to the verses. And I'm still really happy with the way this turned out. One of my favorites on this album.
I spent today, another day, hoping for a better day, another day, a better day.
The next song is called Next Joke, and Alan wrote this song and Ben wrote the words. And when we worked this up, I felt like it needed a chorus, but they did not, so I guess every Galactic Cowboy song does not have to have a big vocal chorus. But what this song does have is kind of a funny story. And the name of the song, Next Joke, came from something that happened back in the 90s when we were on tour in Europe with Anthrax. And we were doing a lot of interviews with the German press, and we were also dealing with club owners in Germany. And don't get me wrong, we met a lot of fine German people. But we also ran into a lot of people in Germany who didn't really seem to have much of a sense of humor or very good personalities. And we played about 7 different cities in Germany. And one night after the show, we were in the dressing room. And Ben and I were talking, and I said, I wonder what German comedians are like. I wonder if it's something like, a man, a priest, and a dog walk into a bar. That's it. Next joke. And somehow we remembered that from all those years before. Next joke. And so Ben included that in the lyrics.
The sky is the limit. When you put your mind to it, you can be anything you want.
Next joke.
When you is a father star, you can have anything. You can do anything you want.
Next joke.
You can go very far. When you reach father star, you can have anything you want.
Next joke.
Nothing can stop you now.
Now, I'm reading these songs off of the vinyl version, so I'm guessing they're still in the same order as the CD. But I have Zombies as the next song. And this was not an old one. I was actually working on this while we were recording. And I got the idea for this song while I was watching that series, The Walking Dead. And I remember this one particular plot line where this guy's falling in love with this girl. And I thought, yeah, that would be my luck. You finally find that perfect one, but oh, no, there's a zombie apocalypse. We're all gonna die.
Oh, here they come!
Thank you.
We did a video for this song and kind of liked the song. It was a total cluster. We hired this guy who had done some horror movies to direct it, and we got all this footage for it, but before we could even have it put together, there was a big flood in Houston and it ruined it. So we had to reshoot a lot of it, and at the same time I was dealing with a lot of nightmarish stuff in my personal life, and that's kind of what I remember from this song. It was a good song, and the video turned out pretty good, but overall it's kind of a bad memory. The next song is called Drama, and there's kind of a funny story behind this one also. We were in the middle of coming up with new songs, and one day we were on the phone with a guy from Mascot, and Alan told him, yeah, we've got this song called Drama. And the funny thing was, is that we did not have a song called Drama. He was just joking with the guy. But when I heard that, I thought, well, that actually is a cool name for a song. And so when I went home, I went through some of my old crunchy tunes that hadn't made it onto albums. And I took the music from that, and Ben and I worked on the lyrics a little bit, and we came up with a new song called Drama.
My mama said to leave a sleeping dog alone. Don't feed the bears. They need a place to call their own.
Have you ever known people who just seem to thrive on controversy? And no matter what it is, they'll always find a way to get upset about something and blame you for it? Well, that's kind of what this song is about. The next song is a ballad with the unusual title Am Is Or Was. It was a song that Dane brought in and Ben wrote the words for. And my only contribution was I wrote some bass parts for the middle that kind of remind me of Tool. And we've never played this song live, but I've seen a lot of people on Facebook who really love this song. And I even saw a guy recently who had Am Is Or Was tattooed on his arm, so I guess he likes it too.
We'll be
next song is Hate Me, and it's a song that Dane brought in back in probably 1992. And when he came back to the band, I said, you know, maybe we ought to revisit that. And Ben wrote the words on this, and it is a rocker. Side C on the vinyl starts out with Losing Ourselves. I wrote the music and Ben and I worked on the lyrics together. And is the case sometimes when you go back years later and you listen to a song, there's things that you say, well, I would have changed this or that. And this is one of those for me. There's parts of it that I love, but then there's other things that I say, well, I kind of learned from it. But nevertheless, a rockin' tune about the depressing subject of addiction. Next is a song I wrote called Agenda. Ben wrote a lot of the lyrics. And even though we wrote this 7 or 8 years ago, nothing's really changed. It just seems like if you go to a movie or watch TV, everyone's got an agenda. And I'm probably not going to stop talking about it till everyone understands how much the media tries to control our minds. Now the last song on the album is the title track, Long Way Back to the Moon. And I wrote the music and the lyrics to this and I sang the lead vocal. And for me it was kind of a reflection of my life with Galactic Cowboys. We'd gone through so much together as a band for a long time and we'd been apart for years. And this was my way of saying, hey, it's time to go back.
Where I used to live, because I'm tired.
any of you gearheads out there, I used an LTD 8-string on bass. And as far as the words, I used a lot of references from previous Galactic Cowboy albums. And honestly, this was my favorite song in the album. I know everyone will have their favorites, but this was mine, personally. I loved the chorus, and Dane played an awesome guitar solo at the end of the song, and I thought it was a nice way to cap everything off. Now, we did include a couple of bonus tracks on this album. It was Believing the Hype and Say Goodbye to Utopia. And I'm not going to recap those. If you have any questions about those, drop me a message and maybe we'll get to those at another time. But that's my recap of Long Way Back to the Moon. I think it was a really good album. I don't think it was as good as the one we're about to put out, but it had some really strong songs on it. For me personally, it was a very difficult album for me to do. Every time I flew down to Houston to record, I was completely stressed out from crap that was going on in my marriage at the time. And it was really a shame because I had really looked forward to getting back with the guys again and making an album. And little did I know that would be the last time we'd ever record as the original lineup ever again. After it came out in 2017, we only played about two or three shows. And that was pretty much it for that album. Mascot did not promote it. They reneged on some of the money that they owed us. And they ended up dropping us. And I'm sure some of it had to do with that we just couldn't tour. But the good news is that a couple of years ago, we did a Kickstarter campaign and you guys came through for us. And we recorded a new album, and I gotta say, it was the most pleasurable experience I've ever had working in a studio. I was able this time to relax and enjoy it. And the guys in my band will tell you that I'm kind of a different person than who I was when we did Long Way Back.
But you're still bad.
All right, before I move on, I wanted to give you a little what's on TV. And the first thing I'll tell you about is a documentary on Netflix about the rise of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And most of it is about their early years, how they got together and became a band. And like most rock documentaries, most of it's about drugs, drugs, and more drugs. With the predictable outcome that your original guitar player will die of an overdose. And if it's one thing I've learned from watching documentaries like this, it's don't do heroin. Bad idea.
Oh, yeah, good one. I never thought of that.
I also watched a couple of season finales. The first one was season 50 of Survivor. And like I've said, I'm embarrassed to say that I've seen every single season. But this year's season was actually pretty good. That is, until the final episode. And it's always the same. It comes down to three people. Two masculine men and one woman. And of course, it was won by the woman who had done absolutely nothing the entire time she was on the island. And that's when I asked myself, why do these white masculine men never seem to win this show? They dominate all these competitions, and yet they get to the end and no one votes for them. And so I looked it up, and in the last 10 seasons, you had an Asian woman, a black woman, a Hispanic gay guy, Cuban woman, tattooed woman, black guy, another tattooed woman, and a couple of nerdy women. And so I'm not saying Survivor and maybe all of these reality shows are rigged, but they're probably rigged.
It's always been fake.
The other finale that I watched was this season of Saturday Night Live. And like I've said before, I used to love SNL, but it's just become such a piece of crap. However, the final episode of this year had Will Ferrell as the host and Paul McCartney as the musical guest. How could you go wrong? Well, I'll tell you how. I've never seen Will Ferrell be less funny, and I blame the writers. For the most part, they just stink. But Paul McCartney, he's not gonna let us down, is he? Well, I hate to say it, but Paul's voice just sounds like it's shot. But he's got a good excuse. He's old and he's been on tour, so I'll forgive him. But I won't forgive him for going on the final Stephen Colbert show. Good riddance to that weaselly douchebag. He got paid over $10 million a year to be a political cuck.
He sucks!
And finally, Alex and I started watching this series called Your Friends and Neighbors, starring John Hamm. And I love John Hamm as an actor, and, I kind of love ham. Baked ham, ham and eggs, ham sandwich, it's all good. And so is this show. It's kind of along the lines of Breaking Bad, but there is one thing that kind of bothers me about it. And that's that it seems like these days, no matter if it's a TV show or a movie, you can no longer have the lead detective be a man. Hollywood has decided that all lead detectives have to be women. And most of the time, they're either black, Asian, or Hispanic. So gone are the days of Columbo and Sherlock Holmes.
What's wrong with that?
All right, just a couple of more things before I go. And the first thing is, I am so sick of hearing rock stars and celebrities talk shit on America. You can hate Trump if you want, I don't care. You can say what you want, you live in a free country. But America is not a terrible place to live. But I see now where Rage Against the Machine is gonna have a festival called Power to the People. Because I guess Tom Morello is just really oppressed. And did you see that the Black Crows were recently playing in Florida? And the crowd started chanting USA, USA. And this apparently upset Chris Robinson, because he said something to the effect of, I don't know what's so good about it right now. Well, let me think, Chris. You're a millionaire who plays music for a living. And somehow you're still able to do it even with this current administration. Yeah, life really sucks for you.
Complete a-hole.
Okay, one last plug for my website, MontyColvinArt.com. I just put up a new monster base print in the Galactic Cowboys artwork section. It's basically a self-portrait. Check that out along with other cool rock and roll stuff.
I probably should.
I'm going to play you out with a teaser from the new Galactic Cowboys album. Like I said, it should be available in July. This one's called Out of the Darkness, and I hope you dig it. But that's going to do it for me for now. Until next time, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me. And
rock on.
Don't be trying to
has been Monty's Rockcast.
Listen, it's over. It's over. It's over!